This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show, where I welcome Dr. Janelle Perkins Muhammad. And Dr. Janelle is a respected psychotherapist, licensed family therapist, and accomplished author with over 2 decades of experience in relationship and life coaching. And today, Dr. Janelle and I dive into understanding ourselves and communication with our partner. And so much more. I really enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Janelle. You'll hear me start the conversation asking about mental health, and we do get into that. But as these conversations go sometimes, where we'll kind of start with an idea and then we'll pivot. And if it's something interesting and there's a lot of value, we'll kind of just go that direction. So just want to give you a heads up with that. And you'll find a lot of super actionable tips and some new things to think about that we haven't talked about on the show recently, a new test that I haven't heard of to help understand our adverse childhood experiences that I think will be valuable for you guys. We'll link to that in the show notes. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in. Hi, Dr. Janelle. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Today, we're going to talk about how our mental health can and will and does impact our relationships. And you mentioned in the pre-show that this is something that people don't necessarily think about when they think about improving their relationship. So why don't you share with our guests how you like to approach this topic and why you think it's important?
Sure. Yeah, I think that one of the things that happens is that we think of mental health and we generally automatically go to mental illness, not recognizing that there's a difference between, you know, mental wellness and mental illness. We just say mental health and automatically mental illness is what comes to mind. And when we think about sexual wellness and connection, what begins to happen is that we have to understand that mental wellness means that we have this ability to think and feel and act in ways that are conducive to healthy relationships. Mental illness is just the opposite, right? It is that thinking and feeling and acting in ways that is detrimental to a relationship. And I like to think of sexual wellness as pleasure over performance. Well, if you're not doing well mentally and emotionally, generally speaking, you're not going to enjoy the pleasure of whatever activity you're doing, but particularly when you're engaging in intimacy, right? In sexual, whether it's non-sexual or sexual play. And oftentimes when clients come to me or I'm talking to someone in the street, if you will, they really are not thinking in terms of how depression and anxiety, for example, might impact the way that they're connecting in a relationship.
Totally. And I'm glad we're able to zero in on it today. And I want to talk about recognizing that and the things that can cause it. You know, I think of work, kids, family, obligations. Mm-hmm. And I personally have noticed in myself, and maybe we could start here, is I'm currently in a relationship. And mm-hmm. outside a relationship, if I'm single, I tend to be pretty relaxed and not anxious. And mm-hmm. we've talked about attachment on the show, and I've shared that I can have anxious attachment tendencies. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure our listeners out there may relate. And it's interesting because it doesn't necessarily affect the, well, it does affect the relationship. I'm thinking sexually, I feel fine, but it's more individually. I'm like, man, I have all this anxiety that I didn't have when I was single. And that's what relationships can do, right? They mm-hmm. they show us our triggers, and they show us our wounds, and they bring out these things that we didn't know they were there sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting, especially I was in a marriage and a relationship with Sarah, my ex-wife, who's still a part of this podcast for mm-hmm. for almost 13 years, most of my adult life. And I found coming out of that and having a few partners and currently being with one, that I'm discovering these new parts of myself that, mm-hmm. you know, individually from a mental health standpoint, that have been quite challenging. So I'll just go with the anxiety part. How can someone like myself think about addressing that and mm-hmm. and then bringing it into a healthier relationship?
Yeah, self-awareness is so important. The more self-aware you can be, the easier it becomes to learn how to pull back and adjust on your emotional instabilities. So the moment that you feel that tingling in your stomach or your palms get sweaty, and you know that that's anxiety coming to your being that has now entered even your spiritual space, it is easier to step back and take a look at the external and say, okay, what's happening outside that's impacting the inside, that's creating this anxiety such that I'm now maybe not even speaking as calmly as I normally would. I may not be engaging, wanting to touch or even express my appreciation at this moment. And some people want to run. They want to get away from that environment because it makes them so uncomfortable. And so it's important to have that level of self-awareness. And that's kind of what I teach people to do on a regular basis, is to stop long enough to figure out, where do you feel that in your body? Because then the minute that you feel it again, you can go, okay, so is there anything that's the same that's happening around me? And is this about the other person or is this about me? And here, this is, I think, a great test for anxious avoidant is, if I tell you that I love you and I anticipate you'll say it back, if you don't, what do I feel? Because if I say I love you, that's just a truth. It's not necessary for the other person to say it back. But we've been conditioned culturally to believe that if I say hello, you say hello. If I say I love you, you say you love me. If I tell you I appreciate you, it's time for you to tell me how much you appreciate me. So it's almost like we're looking to gain acceptance and approval from the other. But the minute we have internal acceptance and approval and self-love, it changes the entire tapestry of the way we think about what relationships truly should look like. What's healthy for us?
I love that I love you test that mm-hmm. as you're saying it, I was kind of walking myself through. And I think sometimes I am doing it for the reassurance and sometimes mm-hmm. I'm not. And it is something I've become aware of. And I try to ask myself in the moment, like, am I saying this for the right reasons, you know, mm-hmm. or do I want to try to self-soothe? Yeah, that's a good one. Hopefully our listeners are following along, and I'm sure they are and can relate. So let's say someone listening is like, yeah, I say it for that reassurance. Mm-hmm. What are some self-soothing tips that we can give ourselves? And of course, it feels nice to be told, I love you back.
Oh, for sure.
You know, but we don't want to be reliant on that mm-hmm. to feel good about ourselves. So mm-hmm. what are some self-soothing tips that we can do?
Right. I think this is the space where I look at the difference between self-esteem and self-compassion. When we are seeking self-esteem building activities, we're really looking for the accomplishment of the external to give us an approval that says, okay, now I can soothe myself because I accomplished a thing, whether that's having a healthier relationship, or it may even be that you've accomplished something at work and now your boss and your coworkers or peers are talking to you about that. Because, and let me say this, relationships really are every encounter you have with another person. Or shoot, even with your dog for that matter. It's a relationship. And so when we think about it, it really is a matter of self-esteem being that external force giving us something. Whereas self-compassion is the greatest soother you could ever have. Because self-compassion is your ability to look within and say, because I'm breathing today, I love me. Because I have taken the opportunity to cook dinner for myself, I appreciate me. I'm giving myself what I need in order to bolster my self-compassion over self-esteem. And that need for the other person to say, I love you, often feeds the self-esteem.
I like to dive into the things below the surface. And mm-hmm. as it relates to self-compassion, I know there's a wide array of reasons that we may not have it as much as we should or could. I don't want to mm-hmm. say should. With your clients and people in general, I'm sure there's some themes. Why do we lose that? Why is it so hard for us to be compassionate towards ourselves?
Yeah, there's a myriad of reasons. But I think the biggest one is the family systems that we come from, right? The intergenerational traumas that exist. And everybody has something in some space, right? When I do what is called an ACE study for my clients, which is adverse childhood experiences, oftentimes people send it back and it's a zero. There are 10 categories that you could check that you've had the experience or not, or been vicariously connected to a particular experience. Most of the time people send it back and it says zero. And we know that if you have four or more, then your chances of having greater degrees of anxiety or depression are increased. So when we start having these conversations, because I'm a systemic therapist, I dig back into the past and bring it to the present so we can see what you want to do with the future. And suddenly we've normalized the trauma that we've experienced. And as a result, we are looking for someone to approve and accept who we are through that trauma lens. And if we were in a space, which I agree and accept that America is not, where we were more collectivistic in our perspectives, we would be thinking more about how am I the best possible person I can be to impact the world around me. And when you are thinking in that way, you are giving yourself the compassion for growth. Yeah. We don't have a tendency to do that. We're conditioned to be looking for someone else to tell us that we made the most money, that we did the best job, that we shot the highest number of, you know, basketball goals, that we ran the ball the fastest, that, you know, we're the most educated, I mean, Mensa or all these things, rather than what's the impact that I'm having because I'm my full self, my whole self. And because I've taken care of myself emotionally and mentally, I now have the ability to pour out and take care of someone else.
What a beautiful take on being able to pull back and ask ourselves these questions, like, am I looking for this validation from others? And yeah, unfortunately, I think I can only speak for myself, but I don't think my situation is unique in that being conditioned to seek that. And I think that's our kind of our work as we become adults is going, no, wait, it's not about what other people think or approve of. And wow, I just love all of that as a framework for thinking about how we enter relationships and mm-hmm. are we going in and seeking this person to normalize our trauma? So let's say we go in, and I'm sure it's in depth in how we can, you know, do this ACE study. And if you want to talk about that, if you think it's valuable, we do that and we identify these things and then we work to heal them from within. What does that process look like?
Oh, wow. So that could be extensive depending on the person, right? Yeah. And depending on the amount of trauma. But I think the first part is, I mean, you can pull up the ACE study on the National Institute of Health website. You could get it. Johns Hopkins has a space on their website. So there are many places. And each state has a mental health commission, and they would have the ACE assessment there. And then you could do it yourself. But it really is about taking the time to ask yourself the question, am I functioning currently based on the trauma that I've experienced that's laid out in this ACE study? So for example, you see individuals sometimes that every time someone moves too quickly, they flinch. And it's possible that that could come from the fact that they have experienced abuse in their childhood. And if they're still functioning out of that space, they're not going to be very vulnerable and not able to get close to people. And before you know it, the person who says, oh, I'm just reaching for a pencil, or, you know, I wanted to get that, you know, spot of food off your cheek. Eventually, that's going to become tiring, that you're always flinching every time I go to reach for you. And that you could be with a really great individual and they'd be ready to leave because now they're trying to pacify the dysregulation of your emotions for the fact of wanting to have a relationship with you. So that process would look like first acknowledging and being aware that that exists, and then working with someone to walk you through the forgiveness of self and others, which can be very challenging, and then getting to the place where you start to practice trusting activities. Allowing people in your space, allowing someone to, you know, reach out for you, not controlling the environment so deeply. Take a kickboxing class, right? Because we're talking about quick movement. So it looks different for everyone, but it definitely impacts relationships.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors.
Certainly going through the ACE study, understanding our childhood, why we're bringing these things into adulthood, into our relationships, is going to be valuable, and also probably illuminate the source of anxiety and mm-hmm. depression. Not to say that there's not just chemical imbalances and mm-hmm. depression can arise. Same thing with anxiety. It could be just what you're eating or that you're not exercising. Mm-hmm. These things mm-hmm. are quite dynamic. So that's super valuable. I want to ask, as we begin this healing and we're doing it on an individual basis, let's say we're in a partnership, how can we start to bring that into the partnership, not just through practice, but is there space to be sharing and mm-hmm. how can we do that and heal within the partnership?
Yeah, that's an entirely different level of intimacy, because when I think of intimacy, it's into me seat. It's looking past the outer expression of what you see and actually digging into the cognitive, the emotional, and spiritual being that stands before you. And when you have emotional intimacy, there's a vulnerability that says you're safe in this space and we can have this conversation and I'll laugh if we're laughing together. But if it's not funny to you, it's not funny to me. I'm not going to ridicule you because, you know, you grew up in a space that didn't feel as safe. And now, you know, you're expressing that in certain ways in the relationship. And it means that that level of safety now allows you to explore that expression cognitively. So now we can have the conversation. And then it begins to potentially change sort of the core beliefs and values, which is that spiritual space. And before you know it, a couple's growing in a whole different way. And where it would have been that, you know, we only think of intimacy as being sexual connection, now we have this whole new level of connectedness that creates eventually a couple that's self-actualized. They understand themselves as a couple. They know who they are. They know what they want to do. They are able to be free to express whatever is happening in life to one another without fear of judgment.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing when we can start to heal within relationship, create that intimacy, and you said spiritual space. It really is. And some of our listeners, I would say all of them, they're tuning into a relationship advice podcast to improve themselves, to grow. Mm-hmm. And their partners may not always be in that same space. And I can imagine that's a frustrating place to be. What would you tell them as far as doing this work and how they can have conversations with their partner who may be a bit resistant or maybe they're avoidant and it's really hard for them to dive into their feelings and share?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's important to think of this as a system. Everything we do, is a family system, a couple system, the way in which things operate. The government has a system. Sometimes it's not operating the way we want, but it's operating, right? And so if you think of it even from, you know, a governmental perspective, every 4 years, we interject something different and it kind of takes a flop, a loop, you know, and then we change it. So relationships are the same way. If you're the only person doing the work, what you will find is that as you make changes in the system, it has to adjust in one way or another. The key is whether or not you're going to stick to the whatever the change is. If it's having a positive effect on you, like setting boundaries, expressing emotion in a healthy way, if it is being able to acknowledge that you need to take a break to continue this conversation and we'll come back in 2 hours, coming back in 2 hours and saying, are we ready? Being consistent changes the system when you interject something new. But you can't do that for like 1 or 2 days and then go, oh, it didn't work. It takes time. It can take months, prayerfully not years, but sometimes it can take years. And so it's important to understand that even when one person is changing, the system itself is changing. And then you get this incredible opportunity to see what the fullness of that is going to turn out to be. You might have to walk away. That's healthy too.
Totally. And that's a hard place to to accept, because there's someone doing the work and there is no specific timeline. Like you said, like we can do the work in months, years, and we have to ask ourselves, what are the positive things that I'm getting from this relationship? Mm-hmm. And I think it is super empowering to be like, I want a better relationship. And often we might look at our partner, say, treat me this way. And it's like, no, what can I do? And as you said, I can change the system and we can do the work. And it's hard. It's hard work, because it would be great if our partner just knew how to love us.
We would have to know how to love us first.
Yes.
That's tough. Some people don't know what it is to be loved, to accept love. So they don't know what they need and they don't know what their expectations are. And if you don't know, how can you tell someone else and then expect them to do it? I always say that unexpressed expectations lead to resentment every single time. And if, for example, I need you to greet me at the door when I walk in each day, I need to say that, not just say, you never talk to me when I get home. because you could yell from the upstairs to me, but that's not what I'm seeking. I'm seeking you to come to the door, acknowledge that I've returned, hug me, greet me, and then we can go our ways for a moment to settle, and then we can come back together and have more conversation. That's specific.
I love that. It's such an important reminder, and it's something that I'm trying to cultivate, that if my partner does something that feels good and I've identified this need, to also positively reinforce it, like over and over. Like, I love when you reach out in the morning. You know, I have a long distance relationship, and I've said, you know, I love when you reach out in the morning and send me texts. It just feels good. It makes me feel loved. And she takes that in. Yep. And then 2 days later, she sends that text, and I'm like, wow, it feels amazing. And then I want to acknowledge that and say, hey, thank you. That I love starting my day with a message and a picture from you. And then you do that enough times, and it becomes a natural part of the relationship. But yeah, I just want to reinforce this idea in how often we don't know what we need. And then that's step one, is understanding that. And then we assume that our partner should just do it, even if we do it. And so I know I'm repeating you here, but it's been so valuable, and it warrants repeating to really, if you're listening, be like, what is the change that I want? And start with yourself, but then share that with your partner in a loving adult communication that we've talked about on the show, and ways to do that. It sounds so simple, but it's not.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors.
It's not. And particularly if you're in a high conflict relationship that you're trying to make some changes and adjustments to, it can be really difficult. And I think that, you know, oftentimes, and I'm going to put this on the women, you can call me if you want to, but I think oftentimes as women, we have this tendency to say, well, the only reason you're doing that is because I told you. Well, duh. Because I would not have known if you had not told me. And I think we have to get out of that mindset. But again, that goes back to the cultural conditioning. The culture says he ought to know, or she ought to be able to anticipate, or that's her role, or that's his role. When in all actuality, it might not be that way. Common sense is what's common to that man or woman's experience. And if I have never experienced that before, and you don't tell me that's what you need, you're not going to get it.
Totally. And I think there is another element to this, that like, I'm in an early relationship that's going really great, and things are feeling good, and there's a lot of the love that feels very natural, and we feel very naturally compatible. And that sometimes makes me relax in the sense of being like, oh, well, she knows how I want to be loved, or what I like, right? And then we get to a moment where it's like, oh, that didn't feel good, or oh, I would have liked that. And it's like, it's kind of this assumption, right? Not assuming. And then obviously, even if you've been with someone for 5 years, like, we're always evolving, and we need to reinforce these things. But I think it's important. And a lot of what I do on the show is share my personal things. And it's like a reminder for myself too, of like, if there's something specific, share it. And if it feels good, because as much as we feel compatible and like, she knows me and it feels good, it's like, she doesn't really. Yeah. And we're still getting to know each other. And it's a loving act for myself and for her in the relationship. And I want to hear it from her side too, of how we can love each other better, and to share that explicitly.
And it's important to do that in a positive way, right? Yes. It's important to be able to do it when things are going well, because otherwise it's like when someone says, can we talk? The first thing that comes to mind is, oh God, what happened? Right? Versus if we're always talking, then it doesn't feel like there's only a conversation when something hasn't gone well. And that is vital to the success of relationship. I mean, even when you're driving down the street, just having a conversation, walking in the park, when it's long distance, being able to do a quick video, you know, that you send to one another that says how much you appreciate how well things are going, and recognizing that you will hit bumps in the road. I, you know, personally, I'm in a relationship with someone who hasn't been in a relationship for, well, he can't say 20 years anymore because it's like, you know, so for a very long time, he just was like, oh, I'm working. And then I came out of a marriage that I had been in for 20 years, 20 plus years. And so we, of course, have different perspectives because he's been by himself for 20 years. I'm trying to be kind of by myself a bit, because I, you know, want to relax for a little while. And at the same time, there are moments when I'm like, okay, I want to hang out. I have to give him space to be able to adjust to, oh, someone's in my space now. Okay, let me figure out how I do this. Otherwise, I'd miss out on a great individual, absolutely fabulous person. So I have to adjust and regulate and think clearly about who this person is and whether or not I know that I know that he truly loves me. And in this moment, he has a lot of whatever going on. Let me pull back because he's going to show up. But that's because of his consistency.
I love that point of having perspective and compassion towards where our partner is coming from, because the ego is like, well, of course they know what I'm talking about. They know these things, but it's through our lens and our experience. And yeah, I was also in a adult relationship in a marriage for 13 years, you know, and that's a certain thing that I'm coming in with. And especially later in life when you're meeting new people. And I think now more than ever, that's a lot of people. That's probably more than the majority. And I've also tried to have that perspective of like, wait, you know, my current partner had a similar experience. It was also married. It's actually very similar relationship history. And I've been divorced twice as long as her, 4 years, and had 3 partners in that time. And I'm actually her first partner since divorce, and she's dated. And so I've tried to remind myself that, not for any specific thing other than, oh, wow, like I remember how new and different it was getting to know a new person in my 30s. And that's what she's going through right now. And that's been so valuable, just from a compassion and perspective point of view, and not just towards her, but towards myself and the relationship.
And age has a tendency to create a space where you can really grow too, because you recognize that who I was in my 20s, I'm in my 50s. So you recognize that who I was in my 20s, I'm definitely not that person in my 50s. And so what I needed at that time is very different from what I need now. And in relationships, when I think back about the fact that I literally have been married or had been married for almost 30 years of my life. So think about that for a moment. And suddenly I'm in the space where I went from my parents' house to college, which, you know, is kind of not on your own, and then got married, and then was divorced for about, I don't know, a year, and got married again, and thought to myself, do I really want to get married again back then, right? And not because I didn't love relationship, but because I just hadn't been on my own yet. And now I'm in the space where I'm really getting an opportunity to have a relationship with me and to understand myself at a deeper level. And my kids are now grown. And so when they come over, if I'm not ready to have them, their company, I can say it's time to go, right? And there's this new phase that happens at this age where there's some people who for sure want to be married right away. They want to, you know, where I'm going, I think I'm going to take a few years and just enjoy this. I enjoy my partner. He's great. We have a great time together. We're both entrepreneurs. We are both traveling all over the place doing the work that we do. And when we come together, it's a lot of fun. Doesn't mean we don't have challenges. It just is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And appreciating a relationship for what it is something that I'm hearing from you and something I've tried to do, because as someone who's in this space of really wanting to improve myself, improve relationships. And sometimes that can take away from the fun because it's like I'm always trying to fix something in myself. And it's like, actually, it's exhausting. And just in this last week, I've been trying to figure out some things for myself and in the relationship. Nothing serious, but I just get in my head. I'm like, wait, pump the brakes. Next week, we're actually going on a trip, my girlfriend and I. Just enjoy that. Just enjoy the fact that I'm fortunate. I have a great life and I'm very happy with my life outside of the relationship and in the relationship. And just enjoy it for what it is and put that aside. Because it's not urgent and it doesn't need to be solved, and to just let it unfold. That's something that's been valuable for me. And again, like speaking to our audience, I know you're tuning in, guys, to improve your relationship, and that's beautiful. And we need these tools. And also sometimes step back and just go, all right, I'm going to just enjoy this weekend and not try to solve something. I'm going to enjoy this next month and not try to solve something. Not everyone's like that, but I'm definitely wired that I'm in my head. I'm trying to unpack these things and these ideas of perfection in that. And maybe this will resonate with some of our listeners, but just to enjoy it, you know?
I think that goes back to my idea of pleasure over performance. We're always thinking about how do we perform in the relationship, even if it's not sexual performance, right? We're thinking about how are they receiving us? How are they perceiving us? Did we, you know, buy the right flowers? Did we wear the right jacket to the dinner? Did we all those things versus being able to really just be in a space of enjoying, having pleasure in the moment. And it goes back again to that mental health space where there are these cognitive distortions of what should, what could, and what ought. I usually have my clients draw, write those words out, write one under the other, should, could, and ought, and then circle it and put a line through it like you're doing a stop sign. Stop shoulding, coulding, and oughting yourself. And at the very bottom of that, be present. Just be present. Just enjoy the moment. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't catastrophize. Don't dismiss and minimize and, you know, go through assumptions and jumping to conclusions. And I know that's not always easy to do. But the more often you practice it, it's just like LeBron James. I'm sure he wasn't shooting at the rate he is now, just out of the womb. He had to practice, right? You have to practice healthy relationship skills. You have to practice not getting into a cognitive distortion. You have to practice communicating effectively, appreciating, loving yourself, giving yourself what you need. You have to practice that.
I love it. What a beautiful place to wrap up this conversation, because I just think leaving our listeners with pleasure over performance, and again, it's a bit contradictory to a relationship advice podcast, but sometimes I find for myself and for our listeners, I think that's super valuable. Because it's cliche, but all we have is right now. And it's a good reminder for myself, because I feel I've just been projecting, and how can I improve, and what should, could, or ought. And I just wrote stop in all caps, exclamation point, here in my notes. And
be present.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a relief. And this has been a beautiful reminder. So thank you, Dr. Janelle, for this beautiful conversation. Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online, and then we'll say goodbye?
Absolutely. So my website is Dr. Janelle. It's DrJeannelle.com. And on Instagram, I'm Dr. Janelle. And on TikTok, I'm Dr.JeannelleLMFT. That's a lot. And so that's where you can find me.
Amazing. Well, we'll have those links in our show notes and on our website. And thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into today's episode. As always, all the links to the guest, as well as any of their recommendations, will be in the show notes page. You can find the link to that in the episode description or by going to idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab up at the top and you will have access to all the episodes that we've ever done. There are over 300 of them. And while you're on our website, if you haven't checked out our free 14-day Happy Couple Challenge, we really hope you do. It's a free email challenge that we send to you. It's 14 days of fun, easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And if you're looking for something that provides a little more help with working on your relationship, whether it's improving intimacy or communication with your partner, or just bringing the spark back, we would love for you guys to check out our online course, Spark My Relationship. We're offering $100 off to all of our listeners if you go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. We've worked with over 15 psychologists and therapists to create the real life tools and strategies that they are teaching their clients. So we wanted to give them to you. It's a self-paced online course that can be done in as little as a month or up to 3 months. You can really decide how much or how little you want to do with your partner, or maybe just yourself. So we hope you guys check that out. It's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Have a great day.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.